Good afternoon. We would like to welcome you to the May 14th meeting of the Savannah Historic Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes in new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic noise, and impact on property values are not within this board's purview and cannot be a factor in issuance or denial of a COA. Personal preference will not be the basis for a decision either. Sign postings. Members of the board receive packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not properly posted this month? Hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. We have five items on the consent agenda. We have item number one, file number 25-001966-COA for 620 East River Street. Item number two, file number 25-001941 for 407 East Perry Street. Item number three, file number 25001975 for 322 West Broughton Street. Item number four, file number 25-001637 for 501 East Bay Street. And item number five, file number 25-001875 for 101 West Liberty Street. There has been a public request to move item number three for 322 West Broughton to the regular agenda. I'll entertain a motion.
Oh, can you please turn on your microphone? Excuse me. Thank you.
Whitfield, I make a motion that we move the consent agenda item number three, the petition of J. Elder Studios at 322 West Broughton, to the regular agenda.
Ms. Whitfield, pardon, before we move on, Ms. Whitfield, do you want to accept the other items on the consent agenda?
Yes, I make a motion that we approve the other four items on the consent agenda and only move the one item, item three, to the regular agenda.
Thank you, Ms. Whitfield. Is there a second?
Rowan, so moved.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. We'll do a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. The consent agenda is approved with the moving of item number three to regular agenda. Moving on to the adoption of the agenda, is there a motion for approval of the agenda with the aforementioned change?
Whitfield, I make a motion.
I have a motion from Ms. Rowan. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Whitfield. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the agenda is accepted. If your item was on the consent agenda and remained so, it has been approved and you are welcome to leave or stay as you like. Approval of minutes. Minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda and were posted online. Is there a motion to approve the previous meeting minutes?
Rowan, so moved.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Is there a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion to approve the minutes has been approved and is passed. Items requested to be removed from the agenda, there are none. There is one item on the continued agenda, that's file number 25-000228 for 504 East Bay Street. And with that, we will move on to the regular agenda. Staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by this board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. The board will then go into board discussion, at which point no further public testimony or comment is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairwoman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. You do not have to provide comments if you do not have any. If you are joining us virtually, please use your raise your hand function and we will call on you. If you are with us live in the studio audience and you wish to speak, you should have filled out a speaker card. If you have not done so yet, you can see Bree and she can help you obtain one and get it up to me and I will call on you. Sorry, I got to flip back my item number three. We'll start with item number three that was moved from the continued agenda. It's the petition file number 25001975 for 322 West Broughton Street alterations.
Afternoon, this is Kelly Mitchell. So the applicant is requesting to make some alterations to the storefront 322 West Broughton Street. Like many of the storefronts on this street, it has undergone alterations over the years. The photos you see on the screen are the ones that staff could find while doing research on the property. This is included in the staff research. The applicant also included it in their application. So the applicant is requesting, again, some alterations. Part of this is to inset the front door as well as to make color changes. Staff did believe that these met the standards and that they were visually compatible. Again, this storefront has undergone many changes and much of it is likely not original. I know a big part of this discussion will be these windows up in the transom type area. As of at least 1940, they had these kind of operable type windows in the transoms. Something similar still remains. Staff believes that what is there currently is not what you see in the 1940s. We believe that this is a new kind of configuration or new window type. So staff was fine with the applicant removing those. They do intend to make this into more of a solid window and no longer those operable shutter type windows or whatever, or however you want to refer to them as. So with that, staff did recommend approval of the storefront alterations at 322 West Broughton Street as requested because the work is visually compatible and it meets standards. Also, the applicant is here to answer any questions.
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff? Mr. Thompson.
Run the color approval by staff down for me.
Yeah, so staff did find that to be compatible. So let me pull up the application. That will better show what they're asking for. So these are some of the colors. So some of it is a paint change and then also material change. So the board will review all the colors of these materials. So, but staff did find them to be compatible.
Okay, and the redder tile one, where does that go?
I believe that is in the... The computer's not one to work with me today, so sorry. So it'll be down here, and it's kind of like the knee wall area.
Be on the lower, the...
A lower portion.
Below the window there, or the, what do you call that?
I've always known it as a knee wall, but.
Knee wall, yes, yeah. I was trying to say, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Are there additional questions for staff?
Woodfield, can I just make a comment? This is not really what the color on that rendering that we just looked at is. This looks a little deeper, more maroon, less bright cherry.
You can confirm that with the applicant. This is the information that was provided to us. So you can maybe ask the applicant for more clarification.
Any additional questions for staff?
Thank you. I don't know. I tell you, I'm having a day. Could I see the photo of the existing and the historical again on the window pattern? And I guess I'm wondering, when you look at the 2025 picture and the 1940 picture, that those opening windows seem to be in about the same location as the 2025, even though they're not the exact same window, it looks like they're historically in the same location. Is staff considering that they're not original and that's why you feel they aren't of any relevance?
I think we had a difficult time confirming what you see here is for certain what is currently there. But we definitely did talk about, you know, those elements gain significance since they have been there since at least 1940. So we did talk about it, but we believe that what you see now is not what you saw back then.
Any additional questions for staff? Thank you, Kelly. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Jerome Elder with J. Elder Studio. And good afternoon, everyone. I want to thank staff for meeting with us out there quite a few times, actually, because we definitely wanted to look into those windows to answer the question about, firstly, the color. The color that you're seeing in that rendering is a little oversaturated and a lot more red. So yes, it's a little deeper and more, it's more maroon than what is showing up. On the television here and the screens up here, it looks extremely red. So what you're looking at on your current screen, though, is a lot closer, especially if it's reading more maroon. It's deeper and darker. It's not meant to look like fire engine red. then, and also, here you can see the tile pattern. So we'll have the soldier courses here. And then up above, we'll have the square tile stack. Just to also answer where it's located. Or if I were to go to the, where was yours? So the reason why we actually went to consider removing the casement windows, whilst we do see that they existed from 1940, the first reason was, as we were working through it, our HVAC engineers did say that we probably need to keep those fixed and get them reglazed and redone because the windows themselves are a patchwork of repaired wood, with just a pane of glass in them, the casement windows. And if you were to look at 1934, there is evidence of potentially something different, but they didn't actually have casement windows in there. So a big reason why those casement windows existed were to help with ventilation because it wasn't air conditioned prior. Now with air condition and also with the types of uses going into such a large volume, it's something that we will have to either make fixed or in our case, we just wanted to go back to simply a single pane within that bay. We weren't reworking the size of the bay. So if ever someone were wanting to put windows back in there in the future, casement windows, they can. Again, it's up to the board if that's something that you'd like us to consider keeping it in all those locations. Other than the central location, which is where our main alteration exists. And that one, this bay, what we have is the recess goes all the way up through the transom as well. So this was the only area that we are requesting to not, definitely not have those casement windows exist because of this alteration. And you could see it. Oh, I'm making it really large. Sorry for everyone looking at the fire engine red building, but it definitely doesn't look like that. But now you can see and understand it is curved glass. We have priced the curved glass. We've prepared for curved glass. So that's all that I do have. Are there any other questions from the board or clarifications?
I have a question. You don't have material samples, or is that something that you'd be willing to review with staff and the board?
Yes.
I think it's a challenge when you're looking at the size and prominence of the storefront and the introduction of a color that we're not accustomed to seeing. Material sample would probably be helpful.
We can get those and have that reviewed with staff to ensure that it's in keeping with what we were showing.
Are there any other questions for the applicant?
Oh, I turn this thing on. Okay.
Please state your name for the record.
Robert Helms. What color is the fascia and the main woodwork on
it? Is going to be the.
Is it the seven?
Sorry, that sounds.
You had a color samples.
Yes, I'm trying to get to that part of the document, which. How did I get to my drawing? Sorry. Thank you. Peter does have a lag.
Yeah, seven.
It is
going to be four. Seven or four?
It is four.
Woodfield, and where is the seven, please?
The seven would be a stone sill. We won't be doing a tile sill, so it'll be at the base of the windows. We'll have a small stone rail stem sill going across. And all of this also corresponds with the interior. I know interior to this extent isn't something that's within your purview. At least for the design of what's going in there. But a lot of it is also addressing and matching with it. And the owner of the building does agree with the color. So we also had to get that approved before even coming to you.
Are there any additional questions for the applicant? Thank you, Mr. Elder. We will move into public comment, and I do have a speaker card for Ms. Ellie Isaacs.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's ARC requested for this item to be removed from the consent agenda in order to express concern of staff's approval for the historic transom windows that are present on the street, street fronting facades. As we've seen, it's clearly shown in the 1940 historic photographs, and we believe that those are the original ones from 1940 that are still present today. The fixed encasement type transom windows are a unique feature, not only to this building, but also to Broughton Street, and deserve to be retained and restored.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment? And just restate your name for the record, please.
Jerome Elder, J. Elder Studio. And thank you for your comments. I think I was able to speak to the owner about the transom windows, and they are open to keeping them with the exception of the two in the center because of that new curved configuration of the recessed. We do have to get them fully refurbished because they may be in their original locations, but they're definitely not the historic window frames for them, the sashes and everything else. It's not. It's just bad wood rotting away, plywood in some cases, painted. So That would be potentially what I think we are okay with. So in all locations other than the recess, keeping those casement windows in the transom area and fixing them.
Thank you, Mr. Alder. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Ms. Woodfield, I'll start with you.
Thank you. I think we definitely would like to look at the, I would highly suggest we look at the color to be sure it's appropriate. And, you know, in this historical facade and this visually, street face and, you know, historic building to be sure that the color is not a little too abrupt. I personally am not feeling like the casement windows are, maybe it's I'm not familiar with it and I know very well that, that it would be hard to operate those windows, so you would just be putting something fixed in there for the sake of the outside look. I think it's worth hearing other people's opinions on that. But my concern is about the color. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson?
I don't know what to say about the windows. We change windows a lot, and and if, I think it would be difficult to operate anything where those are located. But it is the color is my concern too. So I guess I'd like to have a better, more detailed rendering of the color and the different materials in enough detail that we can see that better.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Coleman?
I don't have any additional comments.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Rowan?
No comments.
Go ahead.
Sorry. So my concern is with the convex recess entry. I don't believe it's typical of the building's historic storefront style, which appears to have remained largely intact from the historic photographs we have, which includes the trim, glazing patterns, and cornices and pilasters all have remained consistent over time, which appear to be original to the building. I feel like the curved convex form evokes more of an art modern influence, especially with its significant height. And I feel like it is potentially creating a false sense of history. So I'm concerned with that.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Ms. Nagel?
I think given the building's differences in the upper windows just states that the building has definitely been altered quite a bit in the, from the past. So historically, I wouldn't argue that removing those casement windows in the bottom portion would really be of major historical significance given that the entire bottom portion of that building is clearly not original to what it would have been. The top windows are not, they're not congruent with the rest of the buildings on Broughton Street. They're clearly newer. So I have no problem with the casement windows in the top. As Ms. Woodfield mentioned, they're not operable. They wouldn't be operable. And I find that recessing the entry matches a lot of the adjacent commercial buildings. So I kind of, I like to see that. I think it makes it interesting, and it also matches pretty much every other or almost every other building on Broughton Street that has that recessed entry. And I happen to think that the curved glass just brings an interesting visual element to it. That's just my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Helms?
Robert Helms. I agree with Sabrina Nagel's comments about the windows and the entry. I also share Mrs. Woodfield's comments about the color. I would like to see a darker color. I think that at least the way this thing came out, that fire engine red is definitely not appropriate. And a brown or dark dark red would probably be more appropriate. So that's my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. I'll go around one more time, Ms. Woodfield.
No further comments, except that the curved at the entry doesn't bother me. I think this whole look of this storefront is reminiscent of a historic, but it seems to have been lightened and modernized just through time. And I think that's what it is. And these changes do not seem incongruous to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson.
I was going to pick a color, but I have no other comment.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Coleman.
No comment.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Rowan.
No comment.
Ms. Hamer.
No comment.
Ms. Nagel.
No further comment.
Mr. Helms.
No further comment.
Okay. At this time, I will entertain a motion.
Nagel.
Ms. Nagel, the floor is yours.
I move that the Historic District Board of Review approve the petition as submitted for 22 West Broughton Street, number 25-00.
It's 322. That was an error.
Sorry. 322 West Broughton Street, 25-001975, as the project is visually compatible and meets the criteria.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. The motion on the floor is to approve. Do I have a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Ms. Woodfield, how do you vote?
May I suggest an amendment that we get actual samples of the color before we do the final approval?
I think because the motion has been made and seconded, we'll have to vote through, but you can.
Okay, then I will
up or down vote it.
A nay.
I'm sorry, you're a nay. Not, I don't believe once it's been seconded.
I vote nay.
Mr. Coleman.
Aye.
Ms. Rowan.
Aye.
Ms. Hamer.
Nay.
Ms. Nagel.
Aye.
Mr. Helms.
Nay.
All right, we have a tie. No, I'm sorry. That's 4-3. So that motion fails. So I will entertain a new motion.
Woodfield, I make a motion that we approve the petition for project 25-001975 at 322 West Broughton Street, submitted with the condition that we receive actual paint and tile samples that can be approved before final approval for the project.
The new motion on the floor is to approve with an added condition that the applicant provide material samples to staff.
Madam Chair, I ask for clarification on who's approving it. Is it staff or is it the board?
That you beat me to the punch, Shedrick. I was just going to say, do you want this to come back to you all for approval, or are you delegating approval of the materials to staff?
I think it could be a consent item that if you see them and they seem appropriate, but what we're seeing now are two conflicting colors and one is inappropriate. So that's one way to do it, that if you think it needs to come back,
you would continue the application. You would not approve it today. You would continue it and direct the applicant to return with material samples that you all can review in person at the next meeting.
Thompson.
Hang on.
I
you need to because you have made the motion, so you need to amend your motion.
And I will move to continue the petition for 25-001975 at 322 West Broughton Street. And, you know, we can approve it as staff has recommended, except that we want to see live materials of the final colors before construction.
Ms. Woodfield, sorry, allow me to clarify your motion. You are moving to continue the file number to allow the applicant to provide material samples. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield, how do you vote?
You should have a date. So do you want to continue it to the next meeting, the June 11th meeting?
June 11th, yes, that would be recommended.
Okay, the motion on the floor is to continue the application to the June 11th meeting to allow the applicant to provide material samples, and there's a second from Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Nay.
Ms. Rowan? Nay. Ms. Hamer? Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. That application is continued to the June 11th meeting. Next item up. The next item up on the agenda is file number 25-000867 for COA at 222 Drayton Street, a variance request for signs.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain. The applicant is requesting after the fact approval for signs on the three gas station pumps at the Parkers located at 222 Drayton Street. This request includes three variances from the special sign district's ordinance to allow for the placement of the signs and are as follows. The first one, to exceed the limit of 2 square feet of signage. The second one is to place signage on each side of the pump containing a fuel dispensing nozzle, which is only allowed on that side, not the non-nozzle side. And then third is to exceed the aggregate display area of the fuel pump island signs to exceed 3 square feet per pump island. Just a little context, 222 Drayton Street was built in 1912 as the Savannah Motor Company. It is a contributing resource. The building operates currently as Parker's. This is the only operating gas station in the vicinity of Drayton Street and is the only building historically used as a gasoline or service station that still maintains the same use in the downtown historic district. Regarding the Secretary of the Interior standards, because the gas pumps themselves are not historic and the inclusion of the signage is not affecting the historic building, and they could be removed from the gas pumps without incurring any kind of damage to the historic structure, it doesn't affect the building. For visual compatibility, for materials, textures, and colors, the signs do not greatly differ from any other commercial signage in the downtown historic district. In that sense, they maintain a degree of visual compatibility as any other buildings with signage would, but it's the size and quantity of the signage on the three gas pumps facing out onto Drayton Street that bring concerns regarding visual compatibility of the quantity of signs in the area. So for the special sign districts, for the gas station fuel pump signs, each pump shall be permitted to have 2 square feet of signage only on each side of the pump containing a fuel dispensing nozzle. Obviously, that standard is not met. And then within the Savannah Downtown Historic Sign District, the aggregate display area of the fuel pump island signs shall not exceed 3 square feet per pump island. This has been exceeded by more than 50 square feet, which is the reason for the variance request. So just to quickly go through the variance criteria that we review. For the general consistency, the intent of the sign ordinance is to prevent an overabundance of signage in any of the historic overlay districts. This request is not necessarily consistent with the intent of the ordinance and may exceed the minimum variance needed. The signs themselves are not injurious to the public health, safety, or welfare. For special conditions, 222 Drayton Street is currently the only gas station that maintains its original use. In that sense, there are not other structures to compare it to. Other non-historic gas stations downtown, such as the Chevron and another Parker's, both on MLK, have fuel pumps on both sides, whereas the Parker's at 222 Drayton Street only has pumps on the one side since it's situated on a one-way street. These conditions are not a result of the applicant. This is just, there's no way to have fuel pumps on both sides because it's literally right on the sidewalk. And then one of the other criteria is the special conditions are not purely financial in nature. This appears to be financial in nature as it is solely used as a form of advertising. For literal interpretation, we're looking at if, you know, using the literal interpretation of the provisions of the regulations would deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed by their properties in the zoning district or create a hardship. Staff found this would not be an unreasonable hardship if the signs were to be removed. There is a project sign with the business name on the Drayton Street side near the pumps. And then for the minimum variance, the variance if granted shall be the minimum necessary to make possible the reasonable use of land, buildings, or structures. The proposed variances exceed the ordinance standards by quite a lot. For example, the entire fuel pump island is permitted to have a grand total of 3 square feet, but as seen in the image here, each of the 3 fuel pumps have signage that is 15 square feet for the large signs, and then those smaller ones are 4.3 square feet. Therefore, the grand total is 57.9 square feet, which far exceeds that maximum. For a special privilege not granted, the variance shall not confer on the applicant's property any special privilege that is denied by this ordinance to other lands, buildings, or structures in the same district. All buildings must follow the sign ordinance as written. Though variances can be requested, the variance should be the minimum necessary. In the sense of the volume of the signage for businesses within the DCBD zoning district, it could be seen as a special privilege being granted if such a high volume of signage exceeding the ordinance is granted for this one business. So for these reasons, the staff recommendation is to deny the after-the-fact variance request for the gas pump signage facing Drayton Street because the signs are not visually compatible and the variance criteria are not met. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff? Mr. Thompson.
Thank you for your very thorough analysis.
You're welcome.
Oh, that was it? I appreciate that. Are there any other questions for staff? Thank you, Caitlin. Is the petitioner with us today? All right. Just make sure you state your name for the record, sir.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the board. I'm Daniel Ben Israel, real estate development manager for Drayton Parker Companies, LLC. First off, I'd like to say that staff did an exceptional job presenting the case, very thorough. Caitlin, thank you so much for that. I'd like to start by just echoing some of the things that Caitlin shared, and that's that Parker's Kitchen number 19, popularly known as Fancy Parker's, is in fact a very unique historic landmark, and it's a major contributor to the local economy. Having been established as Parker's Kitchen in 1999, we received more than 26,000 visits to that location every month. Last year, we did more than $2 million in kitchen sales at that location and an additional upwards of $3.5 million in other inside store sales. I'd like to alter my presentation a little bit just to piggyback on some of the comments that staff made. the signage that we have there actually replaced signage that we had there previously due to a modification that we made to, in our opinion, make the exterior of the pumps facing Drayton Street more aesthetically pleasing and compatible, if you will. You may have seen the pictures of this, of the pumps prior to the more recent modification that was made, where the exterior of the pump facing Drayton Street actually looked like a gas pump, which is what it is. And that's due to some design limitations. It didn't function as such, again, because of its location. We're unable to have a pump on the Drayton Street side, which is also, in our opinion, a hardship, because if we were able to have a pump on that side, then we would, in fact, be allowed to have signage and other advertisements on that side as well. But because of that, because of the fact that we are directly abutting the street, and unlike other retail uses in the downtown district, we're unable to have window signage and things of the sort. We would prefer to have signage on this side of the pump, which again would otherwise be allowed if in fact we were operating that side of the of the dispenser as a pump. The signage, as staff initially stated, in our opinion, is aesthetically pleasing and compatible. I know that we exceed the size limitations, but there's a reason for that as well. As I just mentioned, the configuration of the pump, and due to design limitations, has that, you know, standard pump finish on the exterior. In order to address that and come up with what we thought was a better solution, we had designed a metal finish or encasement that just covers that, so that we don't get that otherwise austere, sterile, and otherwise unattractive finish. And so we thought it was a better option to have that metal encasement manufactured and have it cover the pump, and then place our decals over that, again, as a better option. The decals that we have on the pumps, we feel, are a more aesthetically pleasing option to the alternate standard pump finish. It's a continuous branding element rather than a standalone sign, if you will. We're only advertising contents of our store, items that are offered at this location, and it doesn't serve as an advertisement for items that are sold elsewhere. Again, this location is a major contributor to the local economy. It's a non-illuminated sign, so there's no glare there, and otherwise doesn't detract from the character of the district. I'd like to just reiterate the fact that given our location, and unlike other retail uses in the downtown district, we do not have the advantage of having a building, if you will, facing the front, immediately the front, with window signage, which would provide us with an opportunity to advertise some of these items that we're currently advertising on the pumps themselves. This is a very historic building, and we are proud that we are still operating this building as a market and convenience store and fueling station. And we'd like to continue to do so by providing not only the exceptional goods and services that we provide, but also by advertising the very tasteful items that we have in this, in what we consider to be a very tasteful fashion. So with that, I will complete my comments, and I'll be happy to answer any of the questions that the board may have.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions for the applicant? Okay. I don't have any public comment cards. Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak that has not filled out a card? Okay. At this point, we will move into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Mr. Helms, I'll start with you.
Thank you.
No comment. Robert Helms, no comment.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Nagel?
I think that the, given the significant amount of variance requested for the coverage of these, it exceeds, the bottom portion is very large. And if it were just the top, smaller sign, but the bottom portion that goes on top of the faux pumps, I just think is too large and too visible for a main thoroughway. And if the variance were to be approved on this, I think a lot of other businesses would also be entitled to request the same. I'd be inclined to not give my support just because of the fact that it would create a precedent for other businesses to do the same. I don't think that hardship really is enough of an argument here to give the variance. Given that this establishment has been here for a very, very long time. And on a personal note, I just don't think it's very fancy of fancy parkers. So.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Ms. Hamer?
No comment.
Ms. Rowan?
I agree with Ms. Nagel's comments.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Thompson?
Well, my comment is that the applicant should go back and produce a sign that is allowed by the ordinance in this location. I noticed these a while back. Pretty sure parkers have done business here long enough to know what the ordinance allows and what doesn't allow. And here we have, I think it's three pumps all coated with fancy markers or parkers three times or twice on the same side and all the other stuff. So I'm going to support denial, but staff recommend it.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield?
No further comments.
All right, I'll go around one more time. Mr. Helms?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
Ms. Hamer?
No comment.
Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson? Ms. Woodfield?
No additional comments.
All right, thank you. At this time, I will open the floor for a motion.
Thompson.
Mr. Thompson, the floor is yours.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review deny the petition for 25000867 for Drayton Parker Company's location and deny the after-the-fact variance requests for the gas pump signage facing Drayton Street, because the signs are not visually compatible and the criteria are not met.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. The motion on the floor is to deny based on visual compatibility and variance criteria not being met. Do I have a second?
Nagel, second.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Helms, how do you vote?
Nay. I mean, sorry, I vote to deny.
So approve the motion?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That application is denied. Next item up on the agenda is the petition of Andrew Lynch, file number 24-004958 for 20 through 24 East Oglethorpe Avenue, new construction, part one.
Good afternoon, Jonathan Millen. Great to see you all as always. So I think we all know this site. This is on the...
Excuse me, Jonathan. Sorry, I missed a point of order. We have one of our board members who has a declared conflict of interest, and she is going to recuse herself. No. Bear with us a moment.
Ms. Gunn, can you state the board member's name for the record?
Oh, sorry. The board member who is recusing herself is Muriel Hamer. All right, Jonathan, over to you.
Jonathan Milton. So I think we all know this site well. It's located on the northwest corner of East Oglethorpe Avenue and Drayton Street. Many people refer to it still as Corbett Thomas Building. I know it's a different, I think it's Siebold Realty now. As you all may recall, this was last before you at the February 12th meeting. I know some of you are new. At that time, you all gave approval for the demolition of the two non-contributing buildings. One was constructed in 1958 and one in 1965. You also gave approval for the recombination of the two lots. So here's the site right here on the corner. So again, two non-contributing buildings, you've approved the demolition, and you've also approved the recombination to allow for the new construction. Here's the site in question. As we discussed at the during the February meeting, many of the features that give it kind of an interesting character are actually not original. They were done in the 1990s. Corbett was here herself and talked about all the changes that have been made to the buildings. So I think we're all pretty familiar with the site. Again, East Oglethorpe Avenue, Drayton Street to the east, the Board of Education directly to the south, Girl Scouts headquarters here directly to the west, non-contributing building on the other corner, SCADS Hall up here, and then we're meeting today up here. So I'm just going to go through that. So what I think would be helpful if I actually use the staff report, I hope this is big enough and tell me if it's not. But at the February meeting, you requested that the applicant go back and work with staff in order to improve the visual compatibility. And one of the major concerns that you all had was that it seemed too big, too monolithic. And you were also concerned with the visual compatibility with the contributing building directly to the west, the Ballastone Inn. And I'm going to, let's see if I can, sorry. So on the top here, you can see the original design that was presented to you. The applicant has been working to revise it. They can probably articulate this far better than I can, but what they've basically done is break it down into two massings. So this is the main elevation facing south on East Oglethorpe. You can see noticeable changes on the western side, again, to help better relate to the contributing building next door. This has been broken down into a separate massing, actually a number of changes in planes, which I'll walk through a little bit more closely in a minute. You can also see how this corner was removed. So it's set back at the corner from the contributing building to the west. You also had a number of concerns about the base, the storefront base. And so as you can see here, a more traditional storefront base, I would argue, has been employed, as well as some changes to the fenestration patterns, as well as the treatment of the third floor. As we turn the corner onto Drayton Street, one of the concerns that was raised, I know Mr. Coleman had raised this, about the recess, the center bay, and whether that really was set back enough or substantial enough. So as you can see here again, the changes to the fenestration at the first floor for the storefront, again, more traditional as opposed to this more, I think some of you had said it looked a little bit too industrial for the location. But there have been major changes, which the architect is going to walk you through in a minute, and I will have a little more to say about, on the center bay that I know was a concern, particularly of Mr. Coleman's. So again, this is the side elevation, but as we know, with a corner building, there are really almost two fronts. And because of the way this building is located, it's highly visible from three sides, actually. So as we continue to make our way around, this is the north elevation on East York Lane. At the top of the screen is what was presented to you back in February. And here's the revised elevation. Again, mirroring what was done on the front south elevation, it's been broken down into two massings. So it reads almost as two buildings, again, to help it step down and better relate to the contributing buildings to the west. Again, there's a street here, So there are no buildings to the east. And then the first building on the east side when you cross the street is that non-contributing building that you all have seen in the past. The west elevation is partially obscured by the contributing building, but you will see it here. So this was the previous rendering here, and the applicant has gone back. They realize how important it is that this is a visible elevation. So you can see, made a number of changes, both to the massing and the planes to help break up that massing, but also the fenestration. But they are articulating this facade, which staff feels is the way to go, given the visibility. I did want to touch on a couple things, because as you probably noted, we've received a great deal of public comment. We thank the public for being involved and caring about the Savannah Downtown Historic District. I would note for the record, I think we received 94 comments or letters or emails. All of those, just so the public knows, have been posted on the website, and we acknowledge receipt of all 94 of those, as we always do. One of the questions that came up was about the contributing building directly to the west. This is something that we have had discussions with the zoning administrator about, and it was determined that this is a five-story building, which in turn then allowed potentially, not guaranteeing, a six-story building to be constructed directly next door. The other thing I wanted to touch quickly also about, if we go back here, we've had this come up, so I just want to provide some clarification. And I hope this makes sense, and you please interrupt me or not interrupt me, but ask me after if you have any questions. Some of the opponents of the, or critics of the project, however you want to phrase it, have said that, you know, the ordinance does not allow roof decks. So again, we have spoken with the zoning administrator of the city of Savannah, and we've gotten clear direction. I think we all know what a balcony is, Juliet balcony, or it can be a little bit deeper. Right here is a roof terrace. It is not a roof deck because it is accessed from livable, habitable space. A roof deck, as per the zoning administrator, would be up here on the top roof of the building. I know that's a concern that has come up, a valid question from members of the public. So there are no roof decks. The applicant is not requesting any special exceptions or variances with this project. So again, let me go back here to thank you for bearing with me. But here's the contributing building that I was mentioning. To the west, again, five stories. The major change is here, breaking down this massing, pulling it back, rethinking the storefront base, turning the corner, rethinking the base, but also really addressing the concern that Mr. Coleman had related in particular to the recess, and the architects will walk you through that in a moment. And then this is the rear, the north elevation on East York Lane. Again, wrapping it, what staff felt was quite successful was, I'm sure we've all been in many cities where, you know, the front and maybe even the side elevation are really well articulated in terms of fenestration materiality, but then the secondary elevations are often just completely ignored and they're just like blank walls. Given the visibility of the site, we didn't feel that was appropriate, and neither did the project architects. We feel they've done a very successful job of trying to make this in the round on all sides. And again, this is the west elevation, which is partially obscured by the historic inn. But again, breaking down the massing, playing with the fenestration a little bit, and then having the blind windows, which add visual interest. And so I'm just going to go through a few. The applicant will go through more of these, but they provided some simulations of how the building would look. These are the proposed changes. Again, you can see here what I was trying to articulate, that this westernmost bay, or separate, almost reading as a separate building, has a number of changes in terms of the planes. This corner has been cut out to pull away from the contributing building. The bay, the first floor storefront have been completely redesigned. And then there's this large recessed section on Drayton Street on the side. This is a view looking south. And another thing I wanted to, we really appreciate the public comment. A lot of folks were talking about visual compatibility. We've had a number of discussions about this and what the definition of that is. And there's a pretty clear definition. It's the buildings, what you are charged with is looking at the buildings that this is visually related to, which means if you're standing at this site, whatever buildings you can see from this site are the buildings that are, it is visually related to. This is the Board of Education building directly to the south. It is on the other side of Oglethorpe. However, it is one that you should take into consideration. It is, you can see it from the site, as you can see a number of the other buildings. Here's another view looking northwest. Again, I would call your attention to the breaking down of the massing on the western side, the reimagining of the storefront base, the large recess along Drayton Street. And with all of that, in staff's analysis, we thought that the applicant had been very responsive to the concerns you all had raised at the February meeting. We are recommending approval of new construction part one height and mass for a six-story building with potential, with five-story building with potential bonus sixth floor at 20-24 East Oglethorpe Avenue as requested because the proposed work is visually compatible and meets the standards. I would also just note, I know we have some new folks, this is part one. So even though the applicant included, and we appreciate that, you know, some ideas about color and even potentially getting into some of the materiality, that will all, once, if a part one is approved for this site, all of that, I don't want you to think this is your only bite at the apple. In terms of actually all the little details of a project like this, they would be coming back to you for the part two for all of those details. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, or I know the project team is here and they can walk you through the project.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there questions for staff?
Jonathan, Robert Helms. I'm going to start by saying that in February, I wrote a letter in opposition to this project. At that time, I was not a member of the Historic District Board of Review. I have no financial interest in the building, and I know no one involved in the building. So I have no personal stake in this one way or the other, except that I think it's visually incompatible with what is around it. Having said that, I'd like to ask your question about the models that you're showing. And the fact that they seem to ignore a seventh mechanical story. And then the other question I would have about those elevations are that we received in the as one of the comments something from the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition, which showed a elevation which showed that in fact the six stories are as original, it's just that they've been more recessed. And is there anything incorrect about that elevation that we received from the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition?
Jonathan, just before you answer that question, a point of order from the chair. Conflict of interest is not restricted to financial interest or personal relationship. The standard for conflict of interest is if you can objectively review a project and provide an unbiased opinion. So if you can answer that in the affirmative,
I can.
Then you would waive your conflict of interest.
If this adheres to the visual compatibility standards as I understand them, I would approve the project.
My question to you is more direct. If you understand what I just said about the conflict of interest, do you waive that you waive having a conflict of interest? You feel like you can rule unbiased opinion and objectively?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you, sir. Jonathan, go ahead.
Thank you for your, Robert. So I'm not going to necessarily opine on the Oglethorpe Coalition's position. I'll let them speak for themselves, and I'll let the project architect walk through. Staff was able to fully understand what's being proposed here, if that's the question. We didn't think there were, renderings can sometimes be, or if you do watercolors can sometimes be a little off. But again, remember, we're here for part one. The mechanical equipment, and I know that's probably still got to be worked out, would not count as another story. So that's not an occupiable space. That's going to be, still to be determined in terms of the details. I know they showed it to kind of be as comprehensive as possible. I wouldn't get into necessarily what the Oglethorpe Coalition is saying or not saying. I think you all need to look at what was submitted, as the chair said, and whether you feel what is submitted meets the ordinances and the standards.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there additional questions? Mr. Coleman.
Yes, I want to have a little bit of a clarification on the issue of the height of the building and stories. The height of the building does include anything that's above the roof plane for those. So if there's an elevator core, anything that comes out of that roof, that is a part of the height. So that is very important because the total height of the building matters. So I don't want the board members to think that mechanical equipment, yes, if it's not structurally there, that's fine. But any structure that's built above this roof plane that's shown at the top of the roof does contribute to the height of this building.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. And I believe it's 68 feet, 6 inches to the top of the roof. But I'll let the design team walk you through that in a minute.
Additional questions? Ms. Nagel.
Yeah, Nagel. Yes, I just want to clarify that. I'm glad it came up, but is there any rendering that shows any mechanical equipment at all on the roof of this building? Because as Mr. Coleman mentioned, you know, even though the mechanical equipment would not count towards that height, any structure around that equipment or like, is there any rendering or elevation at all that shows any mechanical equipment on the top of this building?
I believe just as what you're looking at right now, the roof plan, there is going to be a mechanical yard equipment area that will be set back. I don't want to speak for the applicant. I don't think they finalized what that's actually going to look like at this point. Again, we're in for part one. But if you look at the sight lines, and where this would be, located, the visual impact of the mechanical equipment, we've been out to the site a million times. I mean, obviously it's right near here. We walked down it. You would not be seeing this mechanical equipment on top of the roof. But again, I'll let the project architect give you some more information on that.
Mr. Thompson, did you have an additional question?
Well, Jonathan just answered the question I was going to ask, so it had to do with sight lines.
Are there any additional questions for staff? Thank you, Jonathan. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Harold Yellen for the petitioner, Oglethorpe Avenue, LLC. I will speak very briefly because I do want to address the procedural issue before Mr. Lynch comes forward to address the petition before you. Since the last meeting we attended, there are two new members, of course, of this board, and we did want to seek clarification as to who would be recusing themselves and who would not. It's my understanding that Ms. Hamer has recused herself, as I believe she should. Ms. Telms, I sincerely appreciate your disclosure, sincerely. Our concern, of course, is that Mr. Helms did previously write a letter which was made a matter of public record. It was one of the letters that was part of your package opposing the project. I have a copy of this letter where he refers to our building as generic, as being bland, modernish blob. You go on and on. Excuse me?
Did I use that word?
I have it. You're welcome to see the letter. It's your email, October the 8th, 2024. You thought the building was ugly. You thought there were parking problems created by the hotel use. And perhaps the most important part, you say in your letter that the building is architecturally not compatible, which is the issue before you today. In addition to the letter, I don't remember this, but I believe Mr. Helms stood at this podium and expressed the same sentiments to you speaking from this very podium. Mr. Helms is now a member. From my perspective, I've never known of someone to sort of serve as judge and jury. His position has already been stated. He's now on the board, now being allowed to vote. The decision ultimately, I believe, is Mr. Helms, candidly, and I will respect whatever Mr. Helms decides to do. But I'd be remiss if I didn't stand before you and explain why we have a concern. It's a precedent for folks who might oppose to then become part of the board and then vote on the very issue they stood before you. So we're here only to raise the issue. We believe that from an appearance perspective, the appropriate thing to do would have been to have recused. But if the decision is to not recuse himself, we will respect that as well. So thank you so much for allowing me to make those remarks. And I'll let Mr. Lynch address the substantive matters.
Just state your name for the record.
Thank you very much. My name is Andy Lynch with Lynch Associates Architects. Thank you for your time and consideration today. I'm here with my partner, Becky Lynch, and obviously Harold Young, you've met. First, I want to thank the MPC, HSF, and DNA, and other property owners that have weighed in on this. We've met with them a number of times through this process and truly appreciate their input as we've moved forward since February. In that regard, I wanted to pull up. Get to where we need to be. Since February, we had looked at two alternative schemes. Mr. Mellon had shown where we were previously and the scheme that we arrived at currently. But we had looked at another alternative scheme that I just wanted to discuss real quick that we had presented to all these groups that we had met with. And by and large, everybody had kind of bought in on the current scheme. But just to review that quickly, this other scheme we had provided basically kept the overall mass and footprint of the building, but it reduced the height of the total building by 5 feet. And we had set back the entirety of the sixth floor to try to mitigate the height. It obviously did not impact footprint or most of the facade elements. We did reduce the glazing a little bit in the middle portion. But alternatively, the petition that we've submitted today is with a reduced height and a greatly modified mass to better address the context along Oglethorpe. Back up to the plan. My partner, Becky, had done a fairly extensive analysis of the site in the last meeting and the adjacent context, which I don't think we need to repeat, but I did want to just make a brief recap. Jonathan already kind of talked about some of the adjacencies. The five-story building next door, which is the Ballastone, the Juliet Gordon Lowe House, which is four stories, and then a number of non-contributing buildings on the other corner that are three stories. Of course, across the street, we have the Board of Ed building, which covers the entirety of the block, as well as SCAD Bradley Hall, the old Marine Hospital building, that also covers the entire block. Our site sits at one of the busiest commercial intersections slash boulevards downtown. We've got 130-foot right-of-way, which is really intended to accommodate these larger scale buildings, especially at the corners. The site is directly relatable to multiple other large scale buildings and smaller scale buildings on the site. And we've demonstrated that here with, we took a lot of cues obviously on Liberty Street from the Duran building, which sits in the corner, on the same corner that we sit on further north. And then obviously Drayton Tower. There's a number of other larger scale buildings such as the Lafayette, Wells Fargo building sits directly behind the Juliet Gordon Lowe House. We'd also shown some precedent images of some other larger scale contributing structures adjacent to much smaller buildings as a reference, even though our project sits next to a five-story building as determined by the zoning department. We thought it was important to show these. So since the project was last reviewed at HRB, we made substantial changes to the project and address most of the board's concerns, we feel, specifically some questions raised by Mr. Coleman and Ms. Woodfield and the general public. We made several major modifications I'd like to review really quickly. Back down to the elevations here. As I expressed earlier, we reduced the overall floor height by 5 feet, which we did by taking some area out of the ground floor. We've reduced the middle four floors by 6 inches each just to get to the minimum allowable height prescribed by the ordinance. And we've reduced the height of the penthouse level. We divided the mass along Oglethorpe into basically two components, a 60-foot facade at the corner and a 25-foot form adjacent to the Ballastone Inn to better honor the original lot dimensions of the site and make the two components more in keeping with the massing of other buildings on the block. This west residential entry element mimics the mass and scale of a typical townhome, which is found along the block, while the six-story element on the corner is fully expressed. We didn't set it back as we had in the original scheme, but is broken by a stronger cornice line that matches the Board of Ed dimensions. The corner mass is more in keeping, we feel, with portions of the Juliet Gordon Lowe House, and so we think this is a much more successful scheme. We modified the overall massing. If you remember from the previous, it was a more horizontal massing. We changed the massing to a more vertical proportion in order to be more compatible with other structures along Oglethorpe, which we believe was a concern, Ms. Woodfield. As Mr. Mellon explained, we have stepped down the front elevation of the shorter portion of the building to match the adjacency and be more more compatible. And we thought it was a better transition to the larger full height mass. We did set back a portion of the third and fourth floors on both the west and the north facade. So right now at the upper levels, this is probably set back 9 feet. And from the front facade here to the building, it's probably 3 feet. We did set back the elevator core. It's about 25 feet from the property line, which is not visible from the right-of-way, which is why we hadn't shown it originally in the submission package, although it does show up in all of our renderings, which we had included. We just didn't feel that it was, since it wasn't visible from the right-of-way, it shouldn't be evaluated. For the large scale development standards, we created a massing, for the corner building that incorporates a base middle top approach and roofline variation, which we show here. So that's on both the north and the south elevations, along the Drayton Street side. We meet the recess standard that Mr. Mellon had discussed, and trying to address the concerns of Mr. Coleman from the last meeting. The recess standard extends the full height from the first floor to the sixth floor. It's set back 4 floors, across 20 feet of the building. Aside from the massing changes, back up here, as Mr. Mellon had explained, we reduced the amount of glazing on all facades considerably, taking out the 3-bay, more contemporary glass facade, and going to more punched openings, on both elevations. We lowered the 2-story, masonry, storefront base to a single story, although we kept the band at the second story to tie back into some of the porch encroachments that occur further down the street. So we wanted to at least look at that. We modified the approach on the sixth floor to make it more compatible and integrated in materials and massings with the lower levels per staff's recommendations at the last meeting. We did deepen the cornice, as we discussed, to match the Board of Ed across the street and to differentiate the upper floors. This obviously is going to be developed further in the part two submission as we look at materials and how to better integrate this. Right now we're showing it as a different material, but it may end up being masonry or brick, or it may end up being cast stone. We hadn't quite figured that out. And then finally, I think the only other comment that staff had previously was the service area, which we moved inside with access to the lane to be in compliance with the ordinance. In closing, we appreciate staff's comments and their report and fully agree with their comments. We think the modifications have made the project much better and are fully in compliance with the guidelines. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lynch. Are there questions for the applicant?
Yes.
Mr. Coleman.
Yes, Coleman. My concern, and I do believe that the revisions to your design is definitely in the right direction and positive. I do have a problem with the fact that the drawings and the design do not fully articulate the massing of the building. The elevator core can be seen from the lane, which is a right of way, which means you can't arbitrarily decide not to show it, because for me to feel comfortable in approving anything about height and mass, every element that's structurally a part of the building becomes an element of that. And I think it's important that those things are shown, because if there's a change later on that makes this any taller, then it changes in what we've approved or have not approved. So I do believe that my concern is, does the elevator core actually stop at 68 feet or whatever and not override? Because usually there's an overrun for the elevator, which means that section might be a little taller. So that's my concern. It's a minor thing, but it's a major thing because it's a part of everything that we would have to consider here. So could you answer that for me here?
As we understand it, the elevator core is shown correctly as we have in the elevations. There are, we also included a number of renderings that show exactly where this mass occurs. Obviously, we haven't selected the elevator yet, but we have worked with some elevators that can fit within our floor to floor height. So we feel that we're in compliance with that. We weren't trying to pull a fast one or anything. So it should fit within the current envelope that we're showing.
Okay, and I guess one other question then is, if the mechanical equipment is to be located on the roof, what would be your manner of access to it?
It would be through a storage or stairwell, just a
rooftop hatch sort of situation.
Yeah, and we haven't shown, we obviously dashed in the mechanical areas. We don't know what the mechanicals are going to look like. Obviously, if they're going to be visible, which we don't think they're going to be because they're up high enough and set back considerably from the edge of the building, we don't think they're going to be visible whatsoever.
Yeah, that's not a concern.
Just making sure. I know that was a question from somebody else at the board.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Were there additional questions?
Yes, please, Woodfield.
Could you just take us through this, I guess, 25 foot? Well, it may be the ground floor site plan, please. So you refer in the drawings to having a 5'6" easement between you and the building next to you.
Yes, ma'am.
Is that your property or is that the end?
That's the Ballastones property. So that exists. Let's see if I can zoom.
So your building is property line.
It's your lot line, but I know that was a concern of HSF. So that's why we had set back the upper fourth and fifth stories to give it a little bit more space. And then again, at the upper story, we had set it back 25 feet in both directions So it's not even visible from the right of way.
Right. There is a visible compatibility issue that talks about the pattern of the street, especially this important east-west street. And, you know, there are voids, there are open spaces. It's not building, you know, across the entire lot. So thank you for clarifying that. And then on the first floor plan, I just want to point out that you're really not stepping back the first floor. I think you're just having a change in material. The building is still a box, and it doesn't look like it's really set back.
It's set back from about a foot from the pilaster of the larger mass. But yes, it's typical townhome development pattern that you would see downtown and along the whole block. So.
Yes, but it's not really separating this into two buildings. It's really just sort of a finished.
I think it's a tricky line that we're trying to, you know, we don't want it to necessarily completely read like a set. We want it to read as part of the building. We don't want it to be kind of a Mickey Mouse, you know, storefront where it looks like a separate building that's completely detached. It'll match in materials and detailing. But we will make it distinctly part of our project. But it will set back a little bit at the facade, and obviously the materials will change. So,
yeah. So can we look at this? I think it's this third floor. So again, on these two floors, they're all lined up on the second and third floor. The facade is lined up with the face of the main building.
Again, there's an offset here of about a foot between the pilasters and the adjacent building, which I would say is which we typically see on zero lot line buildings downtown. We did want to have a little bit of relief and shadow line between the two buildings, but we didn't think it was appropriate to set it back, you know, 2 or 3 feet. Which would be in contradiction of the ordinance as we understand it, as there's a setback requirement. We're required to meet match the property line or match the adjacent contributing structure, which actually projects out beyond the property line with the porch, and the rest of the building is at the property line. Oops.
Okay. So, I'm just sort of talking about massing at this point.
Yes, ma'am.
So if you could go down to the fourth and the fifth floors, and then this setback here is?
So this is the one. It's set back about 3.5-4 feet on both sides from the property line. And then you can see the elevator bank is further beyond in the background. As you get up to the upper floor, it's set back here on both sides. So really the only thing that's projecting is the elevator core itself. But again, this wall from the right of way is not visible. It's even across the street, it's not visible because of the distance of the setback.
I'm sorry, you're saying that elevator.
This wall would not be visible from the right of way, other than maybe this, I guess, a little sliver of the building right here might be visible. But it's set back so far from the property line that it won't be visible from the right of way.
Well, surprising what you see in three-dimensional buildings. And then if we could just look at the side elevation.
Yes, ma'am.
Next to, well, let's go back again. I'm just
this side elevation.
Yeah. So here we have the roof line of the inn next door, which is lining up on the street side with the top of your third story. And then above that line is the roof pitch. And then you have, you know, basically three more stories above where that roof line takes off. So this is the massing problem that I have with this project, is just, you know, the visual compatibility with this neighbor, but this neighbor is typical of, you know, more or less, you know, three or four blocks of these contributing buildings along Oglethorpe. So that's where the big conundrum comes in for me. So thank you for clarifying, you know, those individual points so we can be clear what we're dealing with. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Are there additional questions for the applicant? Thank you, Mr. Lynch.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're going to enter into public comment, and I have a deck of cards here, so I'm just going to remind everyone of the ground rules. Everyone will be given 3 minutes to speak. There's a timer. I will kind of give you a reminder when you're about 30 seconds away from running out of time, and I will do my best to keep you to your 3 minutes so that we can get to everyone's public comment and get home in time for supper. If you joined us late and wish to speak and you have not filled out a speaker card and I do not have it, you'll need to see Bree and fill one out before you will be allowed to comment. And please limit your comments to the presentation you saw today. Again, we're here to discuss part one, height and mass, and the things that are not in our purview, are, you know, the use of the building, the landscape, the parking, et cetera. So keep that in mind when you're making your public comment. First card I have is for Shannon Browning Mullis. And when you arrive at the podium, just restate your name.
Hello, I'm Shannon Browning Mullis. I'm the executive director of the Juliet Gordon Lowe Birthplace, which is on the same block as the project that's being proposed. Our site is really important to about 2 million Girl Scouts and 50 million Girl Scouts alum around the country, and we're really proud that it's in Savannah, Georgia. This is one of only three properties that are on this block, and we really want to be good neighbors. We've not heard from the developers, so we haven't had a chance to have a conversation with them about the project. But we don't oppose construction on this lot. There certainly should be buildings there, and we want Savannah to be a really vibrant city. But we do oppose the scale. I know that I hear this, the staff when they say five stories for the other buildings around, but a raised basement and an attic are a little bit different than what we're talking about here. So we would just ask that we not go six stories with this building. We'd really like people in Savannah to really know they're here and not be able to think maybe they're in Austin or Raleigh or somebody else, because Savannah has a really distinct character. And so we just request that you keep that in mind and keep this building in line with its neighbors. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mullins. Next, we have David Schultz.
Good afternoon. My name is David Schultz. My wife and I live at 105 East Oglethorpe Avenue. We've owned that property for 29 years. We've maintained it with historic standards. We've added a garage that a peer group many years ago approved. We've tried to maintain the integrity of the neighborhood. I oppose the project clearly based on visual compatibility, size, and mass. I don't want to live in a neighborhood with a building with storefront windows. I think that compromises the integrity of the historic part of East Oglethorpe Avenue. So I oppose it and ask for your vote.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. I have Anna Habersham-Wright.
Presentation. Some of the slides, a friend came up with this. It just shows the absolute frustration of dealing with these sort of Orwellian architects.
Pardon, ma'am, could you just state your name for the record before starting your public comment?
All right.
And then we'll need to restart the timer too, please,
okay.
Sir.
Anna Habersham-Wright. Okay. I just wanted to show the original of this, that for someone who spent hours taking photographs from ground level of these streets to show that this is the Savannah we know, and to have these architects saying that, oh, there's just variations and, oh, there's a building six blocks away over here and there's a church over there and there's another institutional building. Let me see, a courthouse, a church, a marine hospital and the Department of Education are the same caliber of buildings as our little spec building that looks just like a New York warehouse. So yes, that they're modifying it slightly, but they started with something completely awful. So that is the what's behind this. How do I change? Oh, here. Okay, get it. Can I get it big again? I've lost it. Sorry. Anyway, about the decks, I mean, it's somewhat absurd to say that you can only have a roof deck with no access. I mean, how do you get onto a roof deck if you don't have a door and a stairs and the rest of it? So anyway, that's not the most important slide. But if all we have is the city redefining the notion of what the words are, then we're in trouble. The last one was very important, which is gone. Okay, there, this one. That they have compared the heights of these buildings. They have taken it to the absolute apex of the roofs, of the pitched roofs of the neighboring buildings. And they, as if you could see the minuscule apex of a pitched roof. And they are claiming that that is the most important point for the height of those buildings. And then we've just listened to this grand description of how, oh, you'd never see it at all. And yet at the same time, they're referring to buildings that are six blocks away that you can kind of see because they're big. But anyway, that I feel is very dishonest of them to be making those kind of comparisons. So that's what I have to say.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. Next up, and I apologize, I'm having a little bit of a hard time reading the handwriting, but I think it's Willifred C.H. Okay, I'm sorry. You must be a physician with handwriting like this. I apologize, sir. Next up, I have John Brown. Very lovely handwriting, Mr. Brown.
I am John Brown. I've lived near in Savannah for about 80 years, permanently for the last 51 years, and watched the progress of preservation and what have you here in Savannah. And I recall the buildings that preceded the so-called Corbett buildings. They were two or three-story brick row houses that were torn down for the bricks. This was long in about 1956 or seven. That's what should be placed there. The tithing lots should be used as they were intended, not recombined to build monolithic buildings and what I call atrocities, much like the Amelia building further down on Oglethorpe facing Colonial Park Cemetery. Savannah is turning into these monolithic buildings completely out of character with what this city was planned to be. I just think we have enough atrocities already. Need to stop it. We don't like monolithic mega buildings used for offices and apartments and condos. It's just atrocious looking. So think about it. We have a precious city here that we need to preserve. We don't need developers coming here and making big money off of these office buildings and apartment buildings. They're ugly. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Next, we have Reggie Gibson.
Hello. I'm Reg Gibson. I'm an architect. I'm one of the architects for the building next door that's been in, primarily shown on those elevation drawings. I've never met, nor is anyone that we've worked with the developers. Anyone, no one's ever said, hey, how y'all doing? We're going to be your next door neighbor. We didn't expect a casserole or anything, but we did expect, like, hey, how are you? So when this thing first came through, I said, we saw it. And I said, oh, there's no way they're going to pass this here in Savannah. It's not going to happen. We're in Charleston. We have same kind of board quality thinking. And all of a sudden, I'm listening to this meeting, and I'm going, boy, the city's supporting that. Architects who used to be on this board are supporting this. Everybody's meeting the standards. They're meeting the guidelines. The drawings that they've used of our building are not quite accurate. Our building at 18, they're showing it with a 9-foot porch off the street. It's a 7-foot porch off the street. 2 feet doesn't sound like it makes a lot of difference, but when you're saying I'm lining stuff up with the stuff next door, it does make a lot of difference. The building's wider. Our building is shown wider. So when y'all were looking at this and trying to make a determination of height, scale, and mass, that's a really important little detail. We looked at your drawings. We've listened to y'all say, yeah, we're articulating this, we're doing that. The only articulation that we can see from your plans is there is a 1-foot brick veneer that appears to extend over the property line going out to the street. I hope I'm wrong on that, but that's what it looks like. And then you've said we've created this new facade adjacent to 18, but it's exactly on the same plane. So it's really nothing more than paint. So the mass is pretty much the same as y'all presented to start with. So the visual compatibility is a real issue to us and I think to y'all. So the only thing I can, and I understand your position because it's really tough to get a client to say, hey, I want this. I need this much space. If this is going to work, we've got to have this much built.
Mr. Gibson, if you could begin to wrap up your comments.
I will wrap them up. So the only thing I can say is I think the building's too big, too tall, and too flat.
Thank you. Next, we have Glenn Keyes.
My name is Glenn Keyes. I've been a preservation architect in Charleston for the past 39 years. I'm also a past president of the Preservation Society of Charleston and an advisor to the National Trust for Historic Preservation. I have great respect for the good preservation work that is ongoing in Savannah. We share many of the same issues in Charleston as you do here. I know that Historic Charleston Foundation is constantly fighting the battle to protect the fragile historic district. New buildings always tend to push the limits of appropriate contextual design that negatively impacts the height, scale, and mass of the surrounding historic neighbors. I am one of the architects for the building next door, 14 and 18 East Oglethorpe. We're concerned that the scale of this new building will overwhelm these buildings and with the many similarly scaled historic buildings surrounding this site. Much has been said about the school board building across the street. It's a large building, but it's designed with this deeply undulating facade that sets back 16 feet, which successfully breaks the visual mass of that building. The proposed building makes only token steps in the facade mass. The corner pilasters have little depth and have little impact. Drawing A9 shows the pilasters extending over the property line.
In addition, the new building is some 18 feet taller than the Board of Education building across the street. Drawing A24. Do we pull up A24? This view of the new building and its mass, I think, tells the whole story of this project with the delicate building next door at the Bellstone. I have a concern about the termination of five stories. I think that's a misnomer. In architectural nomenclature, the building would be considered 3.5 stories over a raised basement. The difference between a 3.5 story raised basement and a 5-story building is very different in scale. I would urge this board to require the architects to further explore ways to reduce the height, scale, and mass of this proposed design. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Jim Hunsrucker.
Hello, my name is Jim Hunsrucker. Greetings. My name is Jim Hunsrucker, Director of the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. Thank you for studying this presentation. I hope the board received our April 26th letter since it was addressed to the board. And thank you to the preservation community for writing letters to the board. We would like the HCBR to consider the design standard of form of building. Yet again, the ordinance prescribes a maximum height and mass for new construction. The standard is found in section 7810C2 that states a proposed building on an east-west street shall utilize a contributing building form fronting the same street within the same ward or in an adjacent ward. The MPC staff vaguely references building forms as in the downtown area. However, one can only look to contributing buildings just as visual compatibility located as specified in the ordinances, since which are the buildings fronted East Oglethorpe in the wards Heathcote, Percival, Anson, and Brown. The proposed massive structure, 6 stories, 68 feet, which does not include the roof mechanics and over 80 feet across, is of a form not found in the contributing buildings that fronts along the prescribed historical stretch of Oglethorpe Avenue. How do I go down? Hey. Here, the Julia Gordon Lowe birthplace serves as an exceptional and acceptable envelope with its height and mass placed upon the applicants. Following this reduced height would also assess the applicant's 3-story narrow appendage fronting Oglethorpe to meet the requirement of the building form following possibly the narrow 3-story house, townhouse at 112 East Oglethorpe, which does not have a significant mass atop. The Board of Education, a massive civic building occupying more than 5 tithing lots and proportions of a lane, does not technically qualify because this front facade is on Bull Street, 128 Bull Street to be exact. Not only does the Board of Edge height, mass, and envelope not match, the applicant's site plan and or footprint would need to follow the cruciform shape. Also note the Board of Ed.
You have about 30 seconds left, sir.
Also note the Board of Ed cornice height is 11 feet taller than a Julia Gordon Lowe. The staff also argues that given the growth of the area over the years, a character-defining feature is the notable variety of building forms found with large-scale ones directly adjacent to smaller ones. That statement bears no relevance to the building form rule. Actually, it concedes a new rule. This building form requirement is part of the design standards. The only way for the applicant to be exempt is through a special exception. Please also note that the building form rule
Thank you,
is
sir.
A maximum. It can...
Thank you.
If you wanted me to answer any questions related to the Oglethorpe plan,
Coalition.
Thank you, sir. Next up, we have Corey Highland.
I have PowerPoint that sent. If you don't have it, it's not needed. Yeah. It's just a luster.
Do you mind just starting? We'll try to. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Corey Highland, native Savannian, downtown resident. I'd like to thank the board for its service. You do this without compensation, must have incredible patience and perseverance. I'd like to explain why I'm against the revised proposal. I'll focus on the outside nature of the building when compared to contributing properties in its own ward and with the two adjoining wards, east and west. I think you'll see from the data I've gathered that its six stories are indeed an anomaly. The way I got the data was looking at the MPC historic building map, which lists each ward and every contributing property in the ward and has an identification number and an address. Doesn't have any information on the height or on the number of floors. So for that, I went to the Chatham County Board of Assessors, which does have a photograph, at least one photograph of each contributing building. And it also has, for some of them, the number of stories. If I still wasn't clear, I went to the Google Maps Street View and also just walked around the neighborhood and looked at the buildings and identified the number of stories. In cases where I wasn't sure, I counted it as a story. So I'm overestimating rather than underestimating the height of the contributing buildings in the three wards. Where did I find 96% of the buildings in Percival Ward, which is a ward about which we're speaking, 96% of those contributing buildings are four stories or less. There are none of six stories, and there are only two that are five stories. The adjoining ward, Anson Ward, 94% of those contributing buildings are four stories or less. There are no six-story buildings. There are three five-story buildings. And then just to the other side, in Heathcote Ward, which is Telfair Square, 100% of the contributing buildings are four stories or less. What you find if you put all that data together is that 95% of the contributing properties in this neighborhood in these three stories are four stories or less. I think, in conclusion, based on the data, this large six-story building in that location is an anomaly. It was said last time we met in February, it's not an anomaly, but it is. It's a dictionary definition of an anomaly, which, quote, is something abnormal, a deviation from the common rule, unquote. And that is notwithstanding the large five-story condominium complex that dwarfs surrounding buildings.
You have about 20 seconds.
Thank you. I'm almost done. That was referenced by staff at Oglethorpe, in which 440 neighbors signed a letter of protest to the mayor and to the city council and to this board. Right now, there's a construction out-of-scale hotel across the street from my house in the Owens Thomas house. Too late for us to do anything about that. Too late for us to do anything about the other one. But it's not too late for this project, is it? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next up, I have Chuck Mueller.
My name is Chuck Mueller. I've been in Savannah since 1979, and I came here on a fluke to teach art. I was just enthralled by the beauty of the town. So over the years, it's been chiseling away at the beauty. It was the Hyatt in 1978, and from there, it's just declined and declined and declined. The building you're looking at is just a big box with icing on it. The building next to it, the Bowstone Inn, is not five stories. There's an attic with two dormers. Originally, probably those dormers didn't even exist, so it was just an attic. The first floor was probably for kitchens, and it was half, not even a full floor. So everything we're looking at this building is just a facade of like making it look like New York City or Boston or another big northeastern town, which I escaped for in 1979. So I moved here for a reason. I stayed here for a reason, for its beauty and its, historic preservation. I've restored numbers of buildings in this town with respect to the beauty of the town. Putting a big box up there and throwing a couple pieces of whatever just to make money is totally inappropriate for this town. And it's, I just see it happening and happening. I hate to say selling out, but that's what I'm seeing. Thank you for my time and your time and considering me loving Savannah and keeping it that way.
Thank you, sir. Next, I have Ida George.
Good afternoon. I own the property at 101 East Oglethorpe, which is diagonally across the street from this building. I and my husband bought this property in 2001. I appeared before the Planning Commission. I respected your request. I spent a great deal of time and money restoring that property. That, however, is not material. What is material is you violate your own height ordinance. You violate it. You violate it with impunity because you are the ruling board. I fear that if you continue this, you will lose your integrity. There will be no integrity. I also think that in terms of mass and scale, this building is totally ridiculous. You just even look at the drawings, you show up. You can tell it's out of proportion. You don't have to be an architect to determine that it's not right. I like the Board of Education building. I like being next door to it. It has beautiful entrances. It has setbacks. It has greenery. This building, if you remove the top two floors, it's fine. If you don't, it's ridiculous. And you are becoming ridiculous. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Next, we have Paul Cobit.
My name is Paul Cobit. I'm here today representing...
My apologies, Mr. Cobit.
No worries. I'm here today representing the Downtown Neighborhood Association. The Downtown Neighborhood Association objects to this most recent redesign on the basis of height and mass. In our view, this current iteration fails to meet the visual compatibility requirement. This current design iteration is still 6 stories and only 5 feet lower than the previous design, a proposal that we all know failed here at HDBR. As such, the design before us today still towers over the nearby contributing structures along either side of Oglethorpe Avenue, including, as we all know, the Juliet Gordon Low Birthplace, one of Savannah's most visited treasures, right there on the same block. The staff recommendation is somewhat unclear. It recommends the approval of new construction height and mass for a 5-story building with potential bonus 6th floor as requested. The DNA's position is that bonus floors should rarely, if ever, be approved. In this case, the requirement for a bonus floor lies in the public access, meaning a commercial business on the 1st floor. Siebold offices are there on site now. Essentially, in this instance, the public gains nothing by approving a bonus floor. A bonus floor is discretionary, not a right, and in our view, this proposal does not earn that right. Further, in staff's report, there's mention of a bonus story is necessary to meet the program of the building. And then it goes on to leapfrog over nearby contributing structures along Oglethorpe Avenue and compare this proposal to large-scale buildings further away and not even visible from the site. Based on these further away large-scale comparisons, staff then concludes that the visual compatibility test is passed. First, it's inappropriate to ignore the contributing structures along the same block in order to justify height, mass, and visual compatibility. Reaching beyond the most nearby contributing structures to consider large-scale projects blocks away defeats the intent of visual compatibility to the nearby structures. Secondly, bypassing nearby contributing structures in order to justify a large-scale project opens the dangerous door to a practice that would enable the justification of any large-scale project by cherry-picking comparisons beyond the view of any proposed site within the district.
You have about 20 seconds left, sir.
And further, if the board restricted in considering the use case of the proposal, sticking only to the letter of the ordinance, why is it appropriate that staff comments on the program of the building? Perhaps the public should be able to comment on program of the building. Needing an inappropriately large structure to benefit the program of the building should not matter in consideration of height, mass, and compatibility. We ask you to reject this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I have Susan Atkinson.
Susan Atkinson, 301 East Charlton. I thought I had 3 minutes, so I would, 2 minutes, so I cut my thing down from 5 minutes to 2 minutes. Maybe I have an extra minute at the end, so I'm just going to read what I wrote first and then ad lib after, hopefully. Here we are again. The historic district has laws to protect it. The Historic District Board of Review was established to uphold those laws. You are the protectors of our historic district. As you know, charged to prevent plans which erode its glory. The MPC and HWR are too often approached and unnecessarily burdened with challenges to our codes. The onus for following the laws are on the individual applicant. Any applicant's plight is not the HWR's concern. This architectural firm seems to be attempting to circumvent our laws, asking the board to break ordinances on their behalf. Is theirs a standard negotiation tactic where a party begins with asking much more than they intend to acquire? There are strict design standards for large-scale development in the historic district, which states that a new building must be compatible with the surrounding buildings, which here are no taller than 4 stories with a sloped roof and windows. This proposed building is a 6-story block of cement and glass covering 3 lots, overpowering in mass and height and not conforming to our HD ordinance. Any argument otherwise is irrelevant in light of this one all-important point. Wouldn't it be nice if applications were only allowed to be presented to the board if they satisfied the rules from the get-go? No one would need to waste their time and energy from having to keep revisiting the same thing. Granting this applicant's request for a building which does not conform to code will mean you have just created a precedent for the next applicant and sends a message that persistence pays off. Denying this application will send the message we want sent. Proposals must conform to the laws, codes, and ordinances of the historic district, or they will be denied. So let's start here today and teach the public that there are rules to be followed. It's our duty to protect the beauty of historic Savannah. And I don't know how many seconds I have left, but I just want to say to me, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not an architect, it's just me, my observation. And I think it's clear as day when you look on those pictures that is out of scale completely in mass and in height. You can't compare it to the historic, to the Board of Education. And if you did, you would have all of Savannah would become the size of the Board of Education.
You know,
it would just carry on. Thank you. But anyway, when you walk down East Oglethorpe, it's a continuity of residential size homes for the most part, and that continuity is greatly broken. I think if you took that, what they proposed, and only on the corner, get rid of the west side of it, lower the height to the 4-story, we'd be okay.
Thank you. Ellie Isaac.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's Architectural Review Committee would like to be on the record in support of staff's recommendation. However, we would prefer that the top level, the bonus story, if kept, were more integrated into the design rather than appearing as an addition. This is a prominent corner location on 2 major thoroughfares, and the design should reflect that importance. We hope that moving forward, more design detail will be incorporated into this top level as well as on the ground or pedestrian level. We recognize and appreciate the significant revisions made thus far, including the punched openings, subtle nod to the tithing lot line, and the stepping down of the building's massing to the adjacent building to reduce the overall appearance of the massing. We appreciate the numerous meetings the architect and owner have had with HSF staff and our ARC, and we look forward to continued conversations as the project progresses.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. And I have David Young.
David Young, I'm a 49-year resident of the historic district. I was brought to Savannah to create the Convention and Visitors Bureau, which is now Visit Savannah. So I know a great deal about the economic influence that our visitors industry has brought to Savannah. I really have just one
comment, and that is, does this project enhance the qualities that have been so appealing to the rest of the world, or does it detract? I think it's very straightforward. It detracts. It does not add anything. It does not improve anything. It does not support what's already here. It's an aberration and inappropriate and unhelpful to the future economy of the city. The visitors industry, which produces billions of dollars for Savannah, is a very fickle business, very fickle.
Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Thank you. Andy Lynch, Lynch Associates Architects. We appreciate HSO's comments and all the general public as well. We would flatly reject that we're being dishonest in any way. My partner and I worked in Savannah for over 25 years, and we just don't engage in that kind of behavior. I do think that a lot of the comments from the general public today have been cherry-picking sections of the ordinance and what should and should not be a contributing building in Savannah, or what we should be relating to as a contributing building. I would say that, you know, if you look at all of the examples that we show, you know, the Wells Fargo building and some of these other adjacencies that we've demonstrated, I guess you could say any of those look like a big white box with windows, as some of the folks have said today. I'll just reiterate, we are working within the ordinance as we understand it. We are not asking for any variances in any aspect of the property. This is a five-story zone. We are asking for the bonus story, but beyond that, we're totally in compliance with the ordinance and are not asking for any variances, as some people have mentioned today. With that, I'd love to answer any other questions if there are.
Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Mr. Helms, I'll start with you.
Robert Helms, no comment.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Nagel?
I think a couple of comments on, I'll start with the height, obviously being the biggest concern of most of the people in the public and this board, or at least for myself. In terms of the height, the height map needs to be respected, especially in this very important block of Oglethorpe Avenue, given the Julia Gordon Low building and the Ballastone Inn being historically such beautiful properties. The height map around it clearly dictates dominant 3- and 4-story buildings. There's very few 5, and the only reason we're going to even consider the 5 are the 2 dormers on the Ballastone Inn. It would have been interesting, and I think I would have loved to ask staff, are those 2 dormers even original to that home, as a member of the public brought up, which really makes it a little bit different. If those 2 dormers were not original to that house and were using it as a visual compatibility of a contributing structure, the 2 dormers really shouldn't come into play because they were added later, but we're not sure about that. So we'll leave that out. However, without those 2 little dormers there, how many buildings of 5 stories do we have? Are we using the 5 stories to add the 6th bonus story? I think that is a really big stretch. I think that 6-story building would dwarf the Ballastone Inn next to it. It would leave it in the dark, in the shadows, and we need to be cognizant of that in the downtown historic district, or we will end up with a lot of beautiful little buildings that are just dark. So I think that it's not just about people who live downtown not wanting big, boxy buildings. It's also, it's relevant to, you know, how much sunlight these buildings next door get and how dwarfed they become visually. I think using the BOE, the Board of Education building, as a relevant height to justify this 6-story building isn't fair. The mass of the BOE is a cruciform, so it has setbacks. It allows for that height to not be visually a block, versus this is a visual block with more height. So it's a double whammy in my mind. I don't think using it, the Board of Education, as a compatible height is fair, given the great amount of setbacks and greenery. It does have this building is being built on the lot line. It is very different. The relationship of the solids and the voids on this block is important to respect. I don't think this building respects that. So on the basis of the mass and height, I disagree that this building is visually compatible to its forms on that block and even across the street from it. So I think there are a few things that I would have liked clarification on, one of which was the potential new materials being added that might be going over the property line. I don't think we've looked closely enough at that. I'm not sure, so I can't say for sure. But if that is the case, then, you know, very little has been done to make this project better. The 5 feet don't make a huge difference, and then adding materials that even go beyond the property line is even worse. So I think in general, this needs to be reconsidered. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Ms. Rowan?
No comments at this time. I want to add one comment just as a point of clarification and for the benefit of the public. It is not really up to this board to make a zoning determination as far as the building next door, whether or not that could be viewed as a five-story building. That decision was made by the zoning administrator for the city and given to us as a point of reference. And so I just wanted to clarify that. Oh, sorry, Jonathan.
I just also wanted to add one thing because came up in some of the letters and even some of the comments today. In your staff reports, you probably know, we put in if the applicant provides us with a project description, we include that. So one of the speakers referenced that the staff had said X, Y, and Z. The staff didn't say any of those things. All we're doing is showing what the applicant is saying the project is. So staff is not commenting on that the height has to be a certain amount to justify the programming. That's what the applicant said. We include that so you all have an understanding of what the applicant's argument is and the scope of work. But I just want to be clear for the public, that's not what the staff said. If you read the report closely, you can clearly see what are staff comments and what are just the project description from the applicant.
Thank you, Jonathan. Mr. Coleman?
I have no comments.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Thompson?
I'm not as articulate as some of the people that spoke today, so I'll struggle through this. But, you know, I was the staff person that helped rewrite historic district ordinance along with my staff and some other people. And we struggled with one thing a lot, and that was large scale or larger buildings. And I need help with this. What's it called, architectural in its time, or what's that expression?
It should be, I mean, the National Park Service says it should be of its time, yes.
Of its time. Yeah. So we are of our time in 2025, and the economics have changed, building perspectives in terms of what they have in them have changed. One of the major issues for Savannah and Historic District is that we've lost a lot of, I don't live in Historic District, but I live in Savannah. We've lost a lot of residents in Historic District, and there's a bunch of reasons. Vacation rentals, houses that are bought, and people live in New York and come here once a year, all that kind of part of it. But the number of people have changed. Just look at the demographics. It's your kids have gone away somewhere else. And so there are fewer people here and other than the visitors. So architecture in its time. So I just want to finish this particular comment. I have another one later, that I have full confidence in the staff. Has looked at this project and applied all of our standards with no bias and correctly. So I support the staff recommendation, but I have a couple other comments later.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield?
Thank you. Well, I always seem to look at this project through the vision of visual compatibility with its contributing neighbors on Oglethorpe. You know, that's part of the ordinance that talks about large scale design. The building form is supposed to be, if it's located on an east-west through street, it shall utilize a contributing form fronting the same street within the same ward or adjacent ward. So, I interpret this long time in the business that this building needs to respect the contributing buildings in its immediate neighborhood on the east-west, very important, maybe the most important street in Savannah, this big boulevard named for the founder of our city, Oglethorpe. So I don't see this building respecting the form of these other buildings. That's one point. The other point is just the overall height, I think, takes away from the contributing buildings. You know, we can talk about height, mass, the scale of the facade, the shape of the facade, but all of those visual, most of those visual compatibility criteria, I find are not met with this building in this context on this key place in Savannah. And then there's one more thing in the Savannah Downtown Historic District Design Standards. It states that they want to encourage contemporary designs that protect and complement existing contributing resources. They are further intended to protect the historic integrity of the contributing resources. So that's the district's design standard. And again, I don't find that this meets that criteria. It is not complementing, protecting, keeping the integrity of the historic manner of this stretch of Oglethorpe. Instead, it is becoming its own entity and not really staying in scale and respecting the contributing buildings around it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. I'll go around one more time. Back to you, Mr. Holmes.
My only comment is that to the extent that Mr. Thompson was talking about affordable housing, I don't think this is likely to qualify as affordable housing. I stand corrected then.
That's okay, sir. Back to you, Mr. Holmes, or does that conclude your comments?
No further comments.
Thank you. Ms. Nagel?
No further comment.
Ms. Rowan?
I'm slightly conflicted over this project. I agree with a lot of the things that Mr. Thompson said, and I also think that you can't ignore that the school board is across the street, and it is massive, and it takes up the whole block. But I sympathize with all of the neighbors that have come and spoken. And I don't know if this should be continued so that the architect can work with or talk with, some of the buildings next door, even the architects from Charleston, maybe with some other ideas for the plan of this building, and getting, more of the community involved in the project and on board. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Owen. Mr. Coleman?
Yes, I'm going to have probably more of a philosophical speech on the fact that, the Oglethorpe plan started with very little small cottages. Nothing of what we have here now is what Oglethorpe saw. It wasn't anything he could anticipate, but he created a great city plan that allowed a city to develop. As these buildings were built, they were new and they changed what was around them at some time. And they were out of scale. They were bigger than what was originally there, but they helped create the fabric of what we consider dear now. There is no way for us to articulate and create buildings that are just going to honor everything of what the past has. We do have to think about how we take care of the future. I'm not saying this building is the answer to that, but we as citizens of the city need to be more open to the fact that if we really want to see Savannah become something, we have to be open-minded about what it becomes. And that is very important. The person sitting on this board, we've all volunteered our time to sit here through a very difficult process every day. I've spent 15 years on boards here in the city, and I've heard a lot of different arguments. And my commitment as an architect is not about my business. It's about loving the city. And loving the city means that you understand that it's growing and that it has to be able to become something more than a museum piece for people who visit. You know, we talk about people coming here to visit. Well, what happens? You build hotels for that. Then we argue against the hotels. Well, we have to decide, what do we want to argue for? Do we want to create better buildings in the city that are able to be great later on or fit into what we have here now? But we're not going to get everything right. It's not possible, and it's really very subjective. I respect what everyone has said here today. I think everyone's right in their own way, but everyone's wrong in their own way as well, because we have our own biases. That's what we are as people. So we need to open our mindset to what's being presented to here, not just for this project, but ongoing. I'm going to be sitting on this board for another 2.5 years, and you'll be hearing me say this kind of thing for those 2.5 years, that I want to see Savannah turn into something that's great. And we have something to do with that, each and every one of us here.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Thompson.
Very well said it, said Mr. Coleman. I just add that you can get another 3 years on the board if you want. I think that's absolutely a great point. The thing that Savannah has that all the places I've ever visited never have had is they have that basic structure, the squares and the street pattern. And that has preserved at least 24 of them have. And, you know, that's really important. If we were sitting here talking about, you know, the lane that used to exist over by the police station there where they built that huge development, the city sold that lane to somebody. We got it back. You know how much it cost? $5 million. We had to buy it back from the developer. So that's city council. Back to my point. I just wanted to point out, in thinking about this project, I couldn't help but think of the Perry Lane Hotel. And I went and looked back at a prior aerial photo that Sages had, and I just couldn't remember what was there before the Perry Hotel. And there's two buildings. One's about 6 stories with the rooftop thing, and the other is 5. They're across from each other across the street. They butt up against some townhomes on the, is that Abercorn over there street? And, you know, so there are some similarities. Also, next to Parker's, which is what, a 1-story building with a roof? Maybe 2 based on the current definitions of things. A bank down the street, which is a single story, used to be owned by Pete Lukacs. The building did. And maybe the bank, who knows. And so on. So that whole area has smaller buildings. I'm not sure which ones are considered contributing, but that was built on 2 parking lots. There was nothing there. And look what those buildings contribute to that area, and it's right next to the Drayton Tower, more or less. But it towers over the Zunzi's and all those other buildings. So, you know, we need to look, what are these buildings going to be considered 50 years from now? Probably contributing in their time. And so we need to, how did you just say it? You have to have an open mind about these other possibilities. So, all right, that was my comment. Thank you all for coming. You guys work really hard on that. I have to say I'm extremely impressed. A lot of professionals out there that have done that in their careers, but maybe not. It was very interesting to listen to all you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield?
I just want to reiterate that I think this is a very different situation because it wasn't a parking lot. It's on a very important street with many neighbors, and the ordinance says it has to be visually compatible, and it has to be visually compatible. So for me, I'm glad that they worked hard to bring down 5 feet and step the building, but I don't think it's enough. They have not made the link between their building and the contributing buildings along this section of Oglethorpe. And for me, that it means this is not the building in its current form that should be approved on this site.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. At this point, I'm going to close public debate, and no further comments will be accepted, and I will open the floor for a motion.
Nagel.
Ms. Nagel, the floor is yours.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic District Board of Review deny the petition number 24004958 COA for 2024 East Oglethorpe Avenue, based on the project not meeting the visual compatibility criteria in height and mass.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. The motion on the floor is to deny the application because it fails to meet visual compatibility on height and mass. Do I have a second?
Woodfield, second.
I have a second from Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Helms, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Nay.
Mr. Coleman?
Nay.
Mr. Thompson?
Nay.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Since it's a tie, I will vote and I vote nay, so that motion fails. I will open the floor for a new motion.
Okay, Thompson. I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition 25004958 as requested and recommended by staff for where's the address? Oh, 20-24 East Oglethorpe Avenue, because the petition's in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Pardon. Thank you, Mr. Thompson. The new motion on the floor is to approve the petition because the proposed work is visually compatible and meets the design standards. Do I have a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Helms, how do you vote?
Nay.
Ms. Nagel?
Nay.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Nay.
And I am an aye, so that motion is approved and the application passes. That will conclude the regular agenda for the meeting. We have a few other procedural things to go through. The approved staff reviews, a list was attached to the agenda and posted online. And remind me, Jonathan, do I need a vote of acknowledgement on that? We just acknowledge that it was.
We just posting them, yes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. There was no work performed without a certificate of appropriateness, and no items have been deferred to staff. There are stamped drawings, inspections completed, which were also attached, and in other business. If you're a member of the public and you're exiting the meeting, if you could do so in an orderly fashion, because we do still have business that we need to get through. Um, In other business, I wanted to take a moment of privilege and thank Jonathan, who informed us earlier during our pre-meeting that he will be leaving us, and this is his last meeting with us. Jonathan, you know, I'll speak on my behalf, and I'll allow other board members to pass along their comments. But I certainly have appreciated the diligence in which you conduct yourself and do your job, the leadership that you've shown to managing this board, and also the support that you provide to staff. We are very, very sad to lose you, but certainly your body of work will be remembered long into the future. So thank you so much for your time here and your service. And if anyone else would like to say anything, I certainly would welcome that.
You're calling on me.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well said. I just wonder if it's me, because, like, this is the second time you left while I'm around. So.
Well, actually, Tom, it's been my thank you for the kind words. It's been a real pleasure working with all of you. And thank you for your dedication to the city. I think Mr. Coleman said it perfectly in terms of what I think all of our goals are for the city. So thank you. And I will definitely send you my contact information if you're up in Connecticut. I look forward to reconnecting.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. I also wanted to take a moment and thank my fellow board members. You know, I know that we ask a lot of you and your time, and it's difficult sometimes to take the public comment that is directed at us as people that volunteer to serve in this capacity. But I certainly appreciate the amount of time that each of you give and the diligence in which you apply to review each individual application. And although we don't always agree, I certainly welcome the dialogue, and I think that's the point of this body. So again, I appreciate all of you and your willingness to serve. Did anyone have any other business before we wrap up and conclude? Okay, well, with that, we are adjourned.